This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Taking a look at this next story, the latest significant piece of news involving 1MDB was yet another excellent article written by award-winning journalists Tom Wright and Bradley Hope of the Wall Street Journal. And it essentially paints a picture of how the former First Lady, Rosmah Manso, factors into the whole debacle. And gosh, it's not pretty.
Well, indeed, it isn't pretty. So in their words, it's a sharper portrait of Miss Rosmah emerging from interviews and people close to her. And the article is quite extensive. Tom and Brad quote people who know her, people who claim to have had dealings with her and her husband, who ultimately believe that her pursuit of the trappings of wealth played a very crucial role that eventually led to the Najib government's downfall.
Now, last night, media personnel swarmed Najib Razak's private residence amid speculation of an impending arrest. According to reports, it was fueled by a scheduled press conference by the police on 1MDB seizures. That didn't amount to much, however. The press conference did happen this morning, and the police finally put a number on the value of cash and items seized in connection with the 1MDB investigation.
Yep, so Bukit Aman Commercial Crime Investigation Department Director, aka Rockstar, Dato' Sri Amar Singh, he provided a very detailed breakdown. So to give you an idea of what went down, here's some audio from this morning's press conference.
For cash seized, total amount is 116 million. For the gold, we are experts to actually authenticate these items. So the total cost that they have come up with is only 442 million. The retail price will be more than 50 to 100%. As such, the retail price will be about 660 million to about 880 million ringgit for this jewellery alone. There were in total 12,000 items all in. Necklaces, we had 1,400 necklaces, 2,200 rings, 2,100 bangles, 2,800 pairs of earrings, 1,600 brooches, tiaras, 14 tiaras all in, the handbags now. We recovered 567 handbags. The total value is 51.3 million. And this value is only for the Hermes bags, not the other bags. The rest of the bags, we have not come with the cost as yet. For watches, the total cost of the watches is 78 million ringgit. Sunglasses, total amounting to 374,000 ringgit. So the total cost of all the items, the retail price, will be touching 910 to 1.1 billion ringgit. That's the total value of the items seized.
Well, that was Dato' Sri Amar Singh, director of the Bukit Aman Commercial Crime Investigation Department.
Yeah,
that was an extensive list.
Lottery, I have to say, I was laughing in shock,
right?
when I first heard that. I couldn't stop laughing.
I haven't heard the phrase 14 tiaras in all. In quite some time, I guess.
So the thing is, what you can't deny is that a lot of these items are women's items, obviously, handbags, earrings, tiaras, which obviously plays into the whole narrative, right? The idea that Ms. Rosmah Manso was involved either directly or indirectly with the draining of cash from the 1MDB fund. And unfortunately, that is the natural conclusion. You'd wonder who else, these items would belong to, right?
Yep. So the Wall Street Journal piece goes beyond the mere spectacle of it. Wright and Bradley Hope follow the money trail and expose a much larger picture, one that includes Rosmah's association with JoLo and Hollywood stars, her attempts to improve her public image, as well as her influence over Najib Razak and his administration. And earlier, I managed to catch up with Tom Wright of the Wall Street Journal himself to talk about this story. Tom Wright, thank you for speaking to us on the evening edition. Now, yesterday, you and Bradley Hope published an article in the Wall Street Journal about Rosmah Manso, the wife of the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak. And maybe we could start about how she emerges in this 1MDB story over the course of your investigations.
Well, I think when we first started looking into 1MDB 3 years ago, she was very much seen as a big spending spouse, in the mold of an Imelda Marcos or a Grace Mugabe or something like that. But as we've reported more and more on this, it's become apparent that she, and this is not just our opinion, this is the opinion of investigators in various different places, including Malaysia, that she played a central role in orchestrating JoLo's involvement with Najib and with 1MDB. She, obviously, Jello's initial in with the Najibs was through her son, Reza Aziz. The Najibs had a house in Kensington Green in London, where the Lowes also had a house. And Jello knew Reza from those days when he was studying at Harrow and Reza was at LSE. He then subsequently, after Wharton, Jello then subsequently became very useful to the Najibs by helping to bring Abu Dhabi investment into Malaysia. This was the Mubadala investment into the Johor land development down in the south. This was around 2007, 2008, in an investment involving Khazanah. And Rosmer came to see him as somebody who could really bring Middle Eastern investment into the country, a great broker and a great sort of a person who could pave the way for better relations with the Middle East. And then she promoted him with her husband. And then when Najib became prime minister, Jello was in a very good position. And that's when you know, the whole 1MDB story started to emerge.
The details in this article are remarkable. It paints this portrait of Rosma, her pursuit of the trappings of wealth, but also as playing a key role and central actor in this international scandal. How long have you been sitting on this story, and have you been able to get more information since the May election defeat of Najib Razak?
I'd say, you know, the story that we filed, that we printed yesterday, would have been the culmination of 3 years' work. Obviously, the fact that investigators are looking at Rosmer Mansour for a possible criminal indictment, well, that's new. Some of the information we've had about her, for example, that she had grown up partly on the grounds of a Malay sultan's palace, we've known for a while. But yeah, this has been an ongoing project for us, and there's great interest. And it also forms a fairly substantial part of our book, Billion Dollar Whale, on this issue.
As more details emerge about the role of Rosma Mansour in the scandal, you know, it's worth noting that she never really held any formal or official positions of power, yet at the same time, this very strong impression of how she wielded quite a lot of influence over the former prime minister and his office. How else should we understand her character in this story?
I think she's obviously a very smart person, and politically maybe pretty savvy, maybe not so much in the way that she continued to be seen with such expensive clothes and jewelry, even though that obviously wasn't very popular in Malaysia. But, you know, when Lee Kuan Yew came to officially visit Najib, when Najib first became prime minister in 2009, he asked to see Rosmer Mansour and publicly said he thought that Rosmer Mansour was part of the governing couple almost. I think that, you know, as we detailed in our piece, she also played I don't think she played an integral role in decisions of state, you know, for example, the finance ministry or foreign ministry, but she certainly played a very important role in helping to raise funds for the first family. So, for example, we have sources in our story yesterday about how it worked, how she would, a source told us that he bought property from a state-owned company and sold it to another state-owned company and shared the difference in the amounts with Rosmer Mansour. So she played an integral role in that kind of way, I think, rather than in official matters of state. Although, you know, the whole story has yet to come out.
Elaborating a little bit more on that point, you write in your article that confidants described the relationship of Mr. Najib and Ms. Rosma as being, quote, devoted to one another and drew closer when faced with criticism from various political scandals over the years, end of quote. What did you learn about the relationship between Najib and Rosma?
Well, I mean, exactly that. They seem to be incredibly close. I mean, they've known each other since the 1980s when he was chief minister of Pahang State. She was working for a property company, I believe. And they do seem to be incredibly devoted to each other, to the extent that through all of these troubles that they faced in the last few years, they've stayed together, and no sign of split or of rancor between them.
Tom, police authorities announced this afternoon that the total value of cash, jewelry, luxury watches and handbags seized from the premises linked to the former prime minister stood at a whopping market value of 1.1 billion ringgit. That's about $273 million. These are staggering numbers, and such comparisons of Rosma Mansour to the likes of Imelda Marcos and Grace Mugabe have been made. Are these comparisons valid?
Well, there's obviously inflation, right? But yeah, I think they're incredibly valid. I mean, the numbers are stunning today. 234 pairs of sunglasses, 567 handbags, 423 watches. I mean, $100 million alone in jewelry. I mean, we reported only yesterday that her jewelry collection, this is from a source very close to what's going on, is valued at $350 million. I mean, so I'd say this $270 million equivalent you just mentioned is just what they found in Malaysia, right? There's obviously going to be assets and properties and other, you know, other more jewelry in other countries. Yeah, I think the comparisons to Grace Mugabe and Imelda Marcos are right. I think there's a lot more money around these days than there was back in the 70s and the 80s. You know, the 1MDB scandal is so huge because of the amount of liquidity sloshing around the global financial system. So when, you know, JLO was running 1MDB and they wanted to go to global capital markets using Goldman Sachs to raise the money, they were able to get investors very easily to buy these bonds that got the money. So it, don't forget, 1MDB wasn't investing state money. They were borrowing money the Malaysian state still owns. And so that creates a huge amount of capital to be taken. And that's why these numbers are so gigantic.
And in this book, Billion Dollar Whale, written by yourself and Bradley Hope, JLO is very much at the center of this 1MDB scandal. If you could enlighten me, would the authorities require more evidence or information or perhaps some form of cooperation from JLO before the authorities proceed with any possible criminal charges?
No, not at all. I think from what I understand, the Malaysian authorities have enough without JLO's cooperation to indict Najib and Rosmer, and from what we're hearing, that indictment will happen fairly soon. I don't think JLO is in any position to strike a deal with authorities because, as the DOJ has described in its civil lawsuits in this case, he is a central figure in the scandal. You can always plea bargain, I guess, in the Malaysian system, but I just can't see a scenario in which he's able to plea bargain very minor punishment for cooperation because he's not a minor character in this. He's a central character.
Tom, given the daily developments of this case happening here in Kuala Lumpur, I think it's sometimes easy for the Malaysian public to lose sight of how the tentacles of this investigation have gone beyond our shores, involving a host of other countries around the world.
Well, yeah, I mean, it couldn't have happened without multiple jurisdictions being involved. I mean, one of the ways in which the money was stolen in the first place was via JLO's associates in Saudi Arabia and in Abu Dhabi helping to funnel the funds away from 1MDB. In the case of, I mean, these are all allegations that are detailed in the Department of Justice suits. But for example, in 2012, when 1MDB raised huge amounts of money selling bonds to Goldman Sachs, the money was taken to a company made to look like an Abu Dhabi sovereign wealth fund, but it was fake and it was allegedly run by an associate of JLO. So without those connections in the Middle East, the money couldn't have been taken. Also, I think a lot of actors in the global financial system helped this happen, some of them unwittingly perhaps. But for example, there's BSI, the Swiss bank that JLO had accounts at and which he used almost as his personal bank. And bankers there have gone to jail in Singapore for their role in this. You've got audit firms, the big four audit firms, three of them all audited the accounts of 1MDB and missed the red flags. You've got Goldman Sachs who raised the money and missed huge red flags. So without, you know, either the connivance of associates or the failure to pick up on the red flags of various financial actors, this couldn't have happened.
Final question, Tom, more so on the coverage of the reporting done by yourself and Bradley Hope for The Wall Street Journal. Your writings have been reproduced by a lot of Malaysian press with very little attribution and perhaps looking away from this copy and paste culture. As a journalist, what do you think are some best practices in the media that can be emulated in getting this story out?
Well, I actually had to write to somebody from the Malaysian media yesterday to complain about this. I mean, it's fine to have a couple of graphs and then to link to our story. But yeah, you know, journalism takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money. And if your story is reprinted in other publications, then that's very difficult for us. I'd say, but at the same time, I'd say the Malaysian media has done a great job in covering this story as, alongside the international media. There's been stories in multiple newspapers and yourself included. And so, yeah, keep up the good work.
Tom Wright, we appreciate your time and thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you.
That was Tom Wright of the Wall Street Journal, who co-authored the story alongside his fellow journalist, Bradley Hope. The article is titled Malaysia's Extravagant Ex-First Lady Lands in Graft Investigators' Sights. A fascinating read. You want to look it up as quickly as you can on the Wall Street Journal.
Yep. Also, don't forget, Tom Wright and Bradley Hope's book will be out soon, the 18th of September. In fact, it's called Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, and it's already available for pre-order on Amazon.
Stay tuned to the evening edition. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.